This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Bright and early on a Thursday, welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. World Cup fever is upon us. We're a week, not quite a week, we've seen quite a few games into the tournament. We're going to be previewing the next round of fixtures in today's episode, and I'm going to quick look back on what we've seen so far. Mark, four games a day we're at the moment. Excited or a bit too much for you?
I think the fact there that you said it's been a week shows it feels like it's been a long tournament yeah. already. Of course, the fact that the games are lasting in excess of like 100 minutes now is probably one reason for that. But yeah, I am excited. I think that we've had the right mix, really, of some good football from England, from Spain and from France. We've had some exciting games. I thought, you know, the way that Canada approached that match against Belgium, USA against Wales was really fast paced, maybe didn't have the quality of some of the others. And then we've had the massive shocks as well, which I mean, always helps, because you don't want sort of Spain 7, Costa Rica 0 to be repeated in every group, do you? So the fact that we've had like 22-1 Saudi Arabia beating Argentina in just the most bonkers game, you know, that you can probably ever remember a World Cup, certainly since Italia 90, I would say. And then Germany against Japan, and you know, a result that leaves Germany in big trouble in terms of the fact they might be out of the tournament come Sunday.
Remarkable. Let's start with Germany then, beaten by Japan 2-1. They took the lead in that game and had numerous chances to double their advantage. But Japan was, certainly after those substitutions, Mark, were really well drilled and looked quality. Germany, I know, came into this tournament with maybe defensive frailties and worries, but really, really poor not to close that game out.
Yeah, it was. I felt that Germany played okay, though, and on most other days, they just win that game. They get the second goal. You know, Musiala, Gundogan had chances to double the advantage. Havertz just offside. And then we're not even talking about a crisis. We're probably talking about a really sort of strong opening show from them. But that didn't happen. They didn't take their chances. And those defensive frailties that were flagged up by a lot of people going into sort of the tournament, you know, were sort of there for everyone to see. Not great defending from, was it Schlotterbeck and Suola for the goals. And Japan showed a lot of effort and spirit, and they didn't go forward that much. But when they did, they looked like they were going to score. And so, you know, they were rewarded for chucking players forward as the match wore on. And I was a bit surprised by his team selection, the Japanese coach, because you know, Tomiyasu wasn't starting, the Arsenal defender, and they looked sort of better defensively when he was on. And then Mitoma as well, the Brighton player that I just think is absolutely fantastic, helped to change the game for Japan. But like I say, I don't want to overreact too much, because I felt that Germany played okay. The problem is that they're in danger of going out of the tournament, and so therefore there has to be panic. And that they're in a worse position than Argentina, who will look at their two matches and think, we can win those and everything will be okay. Because of the way the goal difference has worked out and the fact that Costa Rica looks so bad, you know, if Japan were to beat Costa Rica, then, you know, Germany are going to need to beat Spain. And I mean, that's not a position you want to be in going into the second match of World Cup.
It really isn't. I think a couple of takeaways for me from that Germany game, they felt complacent at 1-0. You mentioned there they had a couple of chances. There was that moment which was relatively amusing, but I think you look back now and go, that was silly, with Rudiger doing his kind of his silly running. Then the goalkeeping from Neuer for that second goal, I mean, he just kind of, they were saying on the punditry afterwards, you know, rule one of goalkeeping, make yourself big. He almost sort of made himself smaller, sort of just shriveled up at the near post. It was very strange. Let's talk about Argentina then, fancied by many going into this tournament. Their price had basically halved from the summer into the lead up of this tournament. Mark, I remember texting you after about 10 minutes of the Argentina game going, here we go. Like, this is what we expected. Messi was on the score sheet. They'd already had a few chances. They had the ball in the back of the net three more occasions. They were all ruled up for offside. It just felt at halftime that this could be a cricket score. And it was anything but. Saudi Arabia winning the game 2-1. I think in terms of my lifetime of watching the World Cup, I can't remember of too many bigger upsets than that. It was a remarkable occasion.
It was, yeah. I mean, I think you are going back towards sort of Cameroon beating Argentina, funny enough, in the opening game of Italia 90 for a kind of wow moment. I think back then it was, you know, the teams went under the radar far, far more. And so Cameroon probably just were better than people expected. But it wasn't known. And actually, they played really well in that tournament. And it's amazing, isn't it, with a World Cup that Saudi Arabia, you can sort of play like they did in that second half. And apart from absolute sort of Asian football experts, but you know, most people just wouldn't have been able to have named just any of their players because they all play domestically. And the effort that they put in, the physicality and the quality of their two goals was quite remarkable. On another day, Argentina could have been 3 or 4-0 up at half time, and everybody's going, Herve Renard, what is he doing with that high line? And I felt that complacency set in for Argentina in as much as they kept getting almost through. And it was just like, well, you know, if we just keep doing that, you know, we'll get second, third, fourth goal, and this is going to be easy. And when Saudi Arabia scored, they were unable to kind of pick that pace up again. It felt like I think in the punditry, they were sort of referring to it as like a pre-season game. It did have that kind of feel to it. And I suppose it was, you know, Argentina just got caught cold, I think. And I don't expect it to happen again in the next two matches. And it's hard to know exactly what went wrong from a playing point of view. Before the tournament started, again, you know, the kind of those that watch Argentina a lot were saying that Lo Celso would be a big absence for them because he connects midfield and attack. And that, I think, we saw evidence of, really. They were unable to get the ball into Messi in good enough areas. I suppose the sort of Enzo Fernandez, the Benfica playmaker, where he might be somebody that starts now because they do need to be able to find somebody that can get the ball to Messi. But a great effort from Saudi Arabia. Kevin Pelline wrote an article in the Racing Post sort of guide to the World Cup. And if you sort of read that back, he mentioned the fact that he felt Asian teams would do, you know, because of what history told us, Asian teams would perform better in Qatar. And that's been, that's played out, hasn't it? Because Japan have won. Saudi Arabia have won. Now Japan's a long way from Qatar, and yet they were still able to do it. Maybe there's nothing in it, and it's just one of them things in terms of a fluke result that they could have got anywhere. But might be interesting for the rest of the tournament. It's just the hosts that have kind of let down the Asian contingent, but really well supported. We're seeing that with a lot of the sort of North African teams and also a lot of the Asian teams. Sort of in World Cups, it's sort of almost just become like, oh, well, you know, the European fans kind of take over, don't they? In sort of certain, you'll almost just sort of take over cities or whatever. But I think they're finding it. It's a long way from home at the moment. And you know, like Denmark against Tunisia, that felt like they were playing in Tunisia, didn't it? The way that the support was for them. So I think that was maybe something I hadn't factored in enough going into the tournament, something I'll be looking at for the rest of it.
Well, we'll be getting on to the next round of games shortly. I just wanted to quickly speak about a couple of other really promising performances, that of France and Spain. We'll start with Spain, Mark, who ran out 7-0 winners against Costa Rica. I mean, Costa Rica, I think after about three goals went in, seemingly just gave up. But Gavi and Pedri really impressed me. I mean, this is an exciting Spain squad, you know, now, but also building for the future.
Yeah, I mean, those two midfielders, just, you know, you just want to watch them every time they play.
They're so young, aren't they?
They are. They're not exact replicas of Xavi and Iniesta, but how have Barcelona managed to kind of replace them from
just
within
so
quickly? They feel like it should be sort of generational talents and that they just wheel out another one. What I liked about Spain was the fact that they didn't play Morata and went very fluid up front. Asensio, Dani Olmo and Ferran Torres That to me feels like the best way for Spain to go in terms of plan A. And if that's not working and you need to put crosses in, then you can stick Morata on. But I think that the longer Morata's off the pitch for Spain, that means things are going well for them. And France, really like their performance. We don't know if they beat much, of course. You know, it was only Australia. And I like the quote from the French journalist Philippe Auclair, who said about Kylian Mbappe that a lot of the times when he plays for France, he tries to solve all of their problems, which is a problem. And I think Mbappe didn't do that in that game against Australia. He just played his normal game. In the last Euros, he was going here, there and everywhere. And in the end, I don't think that actually helped him or the team. And so, yeah, he just needs to play his normal game. And when he does, he's an astonishingly good footballer. So they looked strong. But, you know, obviously, if you look at that Australian team and where most of them play their football, probably shouldn't be that much of a surprise that France have given a going over.
Absolutely. There was an impressive performance from England as well. We'll be discussing that next in our match of the day. Well, England kicked things off in the World Cup very nicely with a 6-2 win against Iran. We all predicted a low-scoring game in that one. How wrong we were. USA up next for Gareth Southgate's side. 8-15 England, 5-1 USA, 3-1 the draw. Perfect time, this one, for those of you wanting to get down to the pub and watch it. Friday, 7 o'clock. An impressive start from England, Mark. And I think having seen some of the performances from Argentina and Germany, excitement bubbling early on.
Yeah, rightly so. It was an enterprising performance. Loved the fact that it didn't stick to that three centre-backs, was able to put an extra attacker on the pitch. Loved the way that Saka, Sterling, Kane, Bellingham and Mount all combined at different times. Declan Rice was just there to sweep things up. A lot of adventure down the flanks from Trippier and also Luke Shaw. Looked threatening from set pieces with the delivery in from Trippier as well. So it was, you can never say 10 out of 10 because they've conceded a couple of goals, but it was better than what I was expecting from England. Iran, I think maybe the political problems at home was something that I hadn't factored in enough. You know, they didn't sing the national anthem, the booing of the supporters. That was a strange sort of beginning to the tournament as far as they were concerned. And they
horrible injury early on as well.
It didn't feel like they were sort of fully in the game until it was over. But you know, England just made sure that they killed them, didn't they? And, you know, Argentina didn't do that to Saudi Arabia. Germany didn't do that to Japan. So a lot to be said for being ruthlessly efficient in front of goal. I know the XG said that, you know, England outperformed way above what was anticipated. And they did score with virtually every chance. But I like the fact that they all combined up front, all those forward players. But then you bring on sort of substitutes. And Rashford, Wilson, and Grealish are all in the tournament now. They didn't lose anything by bringing them on. Rashford's goal was well taken. Obviously, Grealish had a tap in, but I like the way that Wilson sort of came on and showed that he can be a threat in behind and offer a different alternative to Harry Kane, who is struggling with this ankle injury. Should be okay for the match. This will be a different test against a much more athletic USA side. But this, I think, is how England should play for most of the tournament. There might be an occasion when, you know, in the final or semi-final, if they get that far, that they have to take a more conservative approach. But I didn't like the way in the last Euros that Southgate was doing that against teams that England should be comfortable against. Their strength is in the final third. So I don't see why you wouldn't try to play to, you know, those clear strengths and sort of mask your weaknesses by being on the front foot more.
It felt like something was missing after that England game. I couldn't quite work out what it was. And then I realised we hadn't heard from Yuri Geller yet. And he's offered his healing hands to Harry Kane if he needs. But it wouldn't be a World Cup without injury fears around your striker, would it? Hopefully Harry Kane's fine for this USA game. In terms of USA, it was very much the cliche game of two halves against Wales. We looked very good in that first half. I knew you were quite sweet on America in that one, Mark. How do you expect them to kind of line up and approach this game against England on Friday?
Yeah, so I've spoken to our team in the States, PicksWise.com, our sister sort of show that I'm doing some videos for them on Mondays and Friday. They said that everybody's fit. I got a message last night from them saying everybody is fit. And they are very fit, aren't they? The way that they run around and press. So I think I don't see too many changes in terms of their starting 11. I don't see any changes from the way that they'll approach the game. Just think it's very difficult to be able to play at that energy for 90 minutes. And when they don't play at that energy, you see the fact that they're not that great in certain areas of the pitch. And once Wales were able to smash the ball over the press and just hit it up to Kiefer Moore, there didn't appear to be too much else really that the US managed to do. Pulisic played well in the first half. Weir obviously got the goal. I like the way that Tyler Adams was in midfield, and you know, a lot of energy to his play. Defensively though, particularly at centre back, I think they're going to have big problems dealing with England and what they've got.
You haven't mentioned America's best player there, Mark.
No, I was going to mention Josh Sargent. He didn't get around the pitch the way that Kiefer Moore did in that second half.
Okay. Well, that's not a criticism, I hope.
Kiefer Moore's one of the players of the World Cup, isn't he?
I'll always remember watching Kiefer Moore. It was about 5 years ago, I think, at Carrow Road. And he wasn't as sort of known as he is now. I've never seen a man with such large feet. It was almost like he was sort of running about with flippers on. They were huge. Anyway, that's enough.
You said the flippers. He used to be a lifeguard, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, there we go then. As long as he can sort of swim like a fish.
Yeah, I'm sure he can.
How about this game then, Mark? What's your best bet for it?
I'm going to go for England to win. Obviously, they're like, as you mentioned, around 8 to 15. So trying to bump the price up a little bit with England to win and over 1.5 goals. I wouldn't be amazed if the US scored in the game, but I don't see them containing what England have got, not only in terms of the starting 11, but what they can bring off the bench. And as the US tire, I think that's when England will really hurt them. So, yeah, England to win and over 1.5 goals.
Brilliant. Let's get on to the rest of the World Cup action. The early game on Friday sees Wales take on Iran. Now, if either of these teams want to qualify, Mark, this is a huge game to win. Which way do you see it going?
I was going to go Iran or draw a double chance. I know you said they're a game they need to win. I think Iran will feel, if they get a draw in this game, then it basically sort of sets them up for a last 32 match almost against the US. And so I don't see them suddenly changing approach. I don't think they can be any worse than they were against England. We've already mentioned many of the reasons why. Taremi was still a threat up front. As Moon came on for the last 20 minutes, so he, I would expect, would be fitter. And I'm not going to completely dismiss them after one match. I was I'm disappointed in how they played. I felt that they were much closer in ability to Wales and the US than the odds had suggested before a ball was kicked. I'm not going to change my sort of opinion after one match. Wales did improve after the break, no doubt about that, against the US, but Gareth Bale isn't 100% fit. That's obvious. And I'm still not sure I'd fancy them to actually win this game. A lot was made because they finished the match well against the US. There was a lot of positive vibes around there. Imagine if that would have been sort of flipped around and the first half they would have played well and the second half was near total US domination. I think people would have been quite critical of Wales. So, yeah, I think I needed to see more to want to back them pretty short prices to beat Iran.
Let's take a look at the lunchtime kickoff on Friday. It's Qatar against Senegal. Both of these sides lost their opener, but Senegal will be far more pleased with the performance they put in that opener.
Yeah, they will. I mean, that is totally reflected in the odds, because Senegal were odds against to win this match before a ball was kicked in the World Cup. They're now 4-6. I think that's fair enough, and they probably will win. And Qatar were absolutely hopeless, and I wasn't entirely sure what they were even trying to do in that game against Ecuador. Like what was the approach?
That Ecuador prize looks bonkers now, doesn't it?
It does now. The way I was going to go for this one, I thought if Mayla Saar terrorised Matthijs de Ligt, and if he can do that to de Ligt, I expect more of the same, really, against that poor Qatari back four or five, whatever they go with. So, yeah, it's mainly Saar to score. And like I say, I think Senegal are fair enough at 4-6, but always jars with you that you're having to take shorter prices. But maybe that's just how bad Qatar are.
Let's take a look at the Friday 4 o'clock game, Netherlands against Ecuador. I know Netherlands, one of your outright bets, Mark. They were made to work against Senegal, but got there eventually. Is this going to be a trickier test for them?
I think it'll be a similar test. It wasn't good enough from Netherlands. They'll definitely need to improve. I think they can improve once Depay is fully fit, because Vincent Janssen just never going to be good enough. But I think what you get with Netherlands is a team that under Louis van Gaal will almost surrender midfield. It's a bit like Antonio Conte does, really, where you get enough people in defence and then you've got people in attack to make it count in both boxes. And so I'm still hopeful that Netherlands can improve. They will need to have a shout of the World Cup. But you look at some of them big teams that have not won and are now in danger of going out, at least they're not in that position. That's something to be thankful for. In this game, I was looking at under 2.5 goals. I don't think Memphis Depay is fully fit. And so even if he starts, probably not going to get 90 minutes, but you probably need 110 these days. I was going to go for the unders because Depay is not fully fit. And we don't know yet the status of Enner Valencia. He went off with that knee injury. Maybe it was a precaution. It didn't look great. I'd be fearful of saying like, oh yeah, because he's so important to Ecuador. So I think if you are wanting to get with Ecuador, do check to make sure that he's available for the game.
That golden boot market's an interesting one at the moment, isn't it? Like, how many? There's already a few players on two goals, aren't there, after the first few games?
Yeah, there are. I don't think Enner Valencia will be winning it.
After 30 minutes, he had a chance.
Yeah, he did. Hard to say. Yeah, I mean, I like the way that Kylian Mbappe started, but then I suppose you're looking for, well, why not Giroud? I know there were some. I know there were some people at the Racing Post that were backing Giroud. What night was it? Was it Saturday night when Benzema ruled out? Yes, whatever night it was, I got a text message saying, do you think Giroud's going to start now? It might be worth a sneaky one for the golden boot. So there were a few sneaky bets going on. Not sneaky. I mean, it was in the public domain, but it had only just happened. So fastest finger first to get on Giroud. I think Mbappe's the one that can, because you're looking, thinking France can still go deep. If they do, Mbappe's going to play well.
Yeah, definitely. We've already previewed the Friday 7 o'clock game in England. So if you're waking up with a slightly sensitive head and a sore stomach on Saturday morning, what better way to cure the hangover than Tunisia against Australia, Mark?
Yeah. This might be one where, again, if you do need to go out at any stage at the weekend, you may be thinking this
go
is the
out?
One to
what?
Do it. Yeah, well, I didn't say me. I'm just, I'll go out early. I'll go out, sort of get the shopping 7 a.m. or something. But I was looking here, I'm surprising myself with what I'm going to say, but I am going to go for Australia or draw double chance. And Tunisia were good against Denmark, deserved their point, particularly the way they played first half. But they were underdogs for this game before the tournament started, and now they're 11-10. That is a big shift, too big a shift for me to say, sit here and go, yeah, Tunisia are a good bet, because we've seen it before in World Cup. Like, it's one game. And you could take any one game in the Premier League. Imagine, like, you'd never seen Manchester City and they put in a really bad performance. You would just then assume they were rubbish. Or, at a similar end of the scale, if you go back to, even your Norwich boys when they were in the Premier League, Jack, when they beat Man City, you go, oh, wow, this Norwich team's really good. And, you suddenly realise that actually over 38 matches or even the next game, you don't always repeat what they did previously. The market, to me, I don't think was massively wrong. I didn't hear too many people going, Tunisia are definitely better than Australia, you know, what was it, like a week ago, and now they're 11 to 10. So it is one of those ones where you feel like you really are swimming against the tide, but I'm happy enough to do so it's always at the prices. Everything we do is at the prices. And I just wonder if it's gone too far in favour of the Tunisians. And Hristić, the Socceroos' best player by a long way, is likely to return from injury. We've got journalists all over the world, and the our Aussie guy Ronnie, he messaged me overnight to say that Hristić is likely to return. So that's good news.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Let's have a look at the 1 o'clock kickoff for Saturday. Poland against Saudi Arabia, tabletop as Saudi Arabia. Poland, an interesting outfit in that first game. I mean, had the chance with the Lewandowski penalty, didn't they? Didn't convert it. But you would expect them to win against Saudi Arabia, or would you?
I don't know. I thought they stunk the place out, Poland. They were one of the worst teams that I've seen in the tournament so far. So stodgy, so direct. No real pattern of play to them at all. I was under 2.5 goals was the way I was looking in this one. They only had 9 shots between them in their first game. And for all that, it was so exciting to see Saudi Arabia beat Argentina, unless, of course, you backed Argentina to win the World Cup. Or I think they were down to about 102, weren't they, on the Betfair exchange?
I had Argentina outright. I had Saudi Arabia to lose every game and finish bottom of the table.
Okay, so you maybe didn't find it quite as exciting. But they did score with their only 2 proper shots. So on another day, like I say, that game just finishes comfortable Argentina win. And I'm not sure either team have got a huge amount for them going forward. Obviously, you've got Lewandowski, but if he doesn't get the service, he's not going to score goals.
4 o'clock Saturday. This is an exciting one. France against Denmark. Now, obviously, we've spoken about France a fair bit on this podcast already. Denmark. Many in the World Cup betting guide produced by the Racing Post are quite keen on Denmark to top this group, Mark. And this might be controversial speaking to you. I really didn't see much from Denmark in that opener.
No, they weren't good enough against Tunisia. Mm. I think they were surprised by how physical and good Tunisia were in the first half. They got their act together as the match wore on, and Cornelius has missed an absolute sitter. And
oh my goodness,
if that
yeah.
goes in, you know, 1-0, you know, England only beat Tunisia by 1 goal, didn't they? Was that in the last World Cup? It feels like
it was. Yeah.
So, like I say, I don't get too high or too low on the back of one game. We know that Denmark have beaten France twice already this year. I think that Denmark being underdogs maybe suits the way that they want to play as well. So yeah, there is a different approach, isn't there, when you're able to sit back and then try to hit on the counter-attack yourself. But, I mean, we mentioned Gareth Southgate going on the offensive. I mean, Didier Deschamps did the same. This is absolutely crazy. I mean, two of the most conservative coaches around have just suddenly gone for it. But the way that France, with Mbappe and Dembele on the wings, Giroud through the middle, Lucas Hernandez's injury, I think, hurts them defensively because he's like a stay-at-home left-back. He, you know, almost somebody that can play centre-back as well. He won't venture forward. He's out with an ACL. His brother, Theo, is completely different, almost like a winger. So that offers them more going forward, but leaves them even more vulnerable than they were previously at the back. And I felt they were pretty vulnerable in the first place. Really looking forward to the game. Over 2.5 goals.
Saturday, 7 o'clock, Argentina, Mexico. Obviously, Argentina losing their first game against Saudi Arabia. I keep hearing the word aggression, Mark, in kind of analysis of the games. The teams that have maybe had, you know, performances that they were proud of, Saudi Arabia, Tunisia thrown in there, they were so aggressive. And Argentina, people saying they weren't aggressive enough. Do you think that's something to look into?
Because I think what we've come to expect in previous World Cups is that minnows, if you like, just pack the defence and hope that that's the way to get results. The sort of two that did that, Iran, Costa Rica, and I suppose Qatar as well, were completely played off the pitch. The underdogs that actually had a real go in terms of, like I say, being aggressive in the press were the ones that were able to unsettle the favourites. And when it goes wrong, then you look really silly doing that. But I just think it's the way that football is going, isn't it? More and more coaches want to be on the front foot. And it's not always for attacking reasons that you do that. Pep Guardiola says the best way to defend is to press and to keep the ball. Because if you've got it, the opponents can't have it. And if you press well, like, that's when you've got most players around the ball when you've just lost it. So it does make sense. It's just, if you play through the press, then you're suddenly four against four or whatever it is, and the opponents are likely to score or at least get a big opportunity out of it. I mean, I don't think aggression will be a problem for Argentina in this game. I expect them to come out all guns blazing. I was surprised, but apparently in Argentina, they've not been getting as much stick as what you'd imagine that they would. And can you imagine what that would be like if England would have lost to Saudi Arabia?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I think the media are calm, and that really surprised me. But I think they've said, this is a team to be proud of. They've won the Copa America. They were 36 matches unbeaten or whatever it was. Actually, that kind of unbeaten run was getting in the way of what they're trying to do. Now they can reset. They're not out of the tournament. There was nothing to be fearful from Mexico or Poland. The Italian 90, they lost to Cameroon, went on to the final. So I don't think now is the time to panic here. And I was looking at Argentina -1 Asian handicap. You get your money back if Argentina win by just one goal. Mexico with a better team against Poland, but not by a huge amount. And I think those that were negative about them before the tournament were probably correct. And Argentina, one fluke result. Let's not panic just yet.
Okay, let's move on to Japan against Costa Rica. Another one of my bets, Costa Rica to lose every game. I'm hopeful that you're going to keep me happy here, Mark.
Yeah, I'm Japan to win 2-0. Costa Rica had no shots against Spain. You looked at that 11 and wondered where the goals were going to come from. Look, Japan are not as good as Spain, so there is more opportunity here. But I just don't think they're very good, Costa Rica. And it maybe makes a mockery of the fact that CONCACAF get 3.5 qualifying spots. And, that playoff is again, the playoff this time around is against New Zealand. So you can finish fourth in a qualifying region where Mexico, USA and Canada are the top three. And then you're fighting it out with Panama. And then all you've got to do is beat New Zealand. That doesn't feel right to me.
No, absolutely not. Well, good luck to the Japanese in that one. Let's go on to the 1 o'clock game on Sunday, Belgium against Morocco. Probably one of the most disappointing showings, I think, in terms of what we expected from Belgium. And I know they weren't going into this World Cup as highly rated as previous tournament, but you expected them to make slightly easier work against Canada, where I thought were unlucky.
Yeah, but Belgium were rubbish, absolute rubbish. And from just, Courtois has made the penalty save, so we can absorb him in that. Maybe Onana when he came on, there was the odd glimpse from Trossard. But like Batshuayi scored the goal, but apart from his goal was just useless. I mean, his touch, his runs, just not what you'd expect of somebody that's playing in a forward line with Kevin De Bruyne. And I don't think Kevin De Bruyne appreciated it much either. And then his passes started going off. At the back,
he said in his interview, didn't he, that he didn't deserve man of the match?
Yeah. I mean, he said I won because of my reputation, and he's probably right. I mean, if you're looking at it, a Canadian player should have won man of the match in that game, shouldn't they? So it's never going to work like that. Interestingly, though, if you look at the odds, right, Belgium were 4-7 to beat Morocco before the tournament started. They're now 11-10.
Wow. Okay.
So, what do you do here? I mean,
11-10. Wow. Maybe, yeah.
I'm still struggling to back Belgium even at 11-10. I'm going to go for the draw. Morocco were a team that I was sort of wanted to be with pre-tournament, and they got that sort of bore draw against Croatia. I just see them being very patient in this game as well, and they'll happily take another point. And then see if they can beat Canada in their last game. And I'm not sure Belgium have got enough about them to win the game. Just don't fancy them.
Croatia, Canada up next. I think Croatia, I might be wrong here, Matt, but in terms of Croatia, probably one of the most severe drop-offs from the last World Cup. Am I fair in
saying that? Yeah, they were pedestrian, weren't they, against Morocco. Didn't create much, didn't give away much, but I suppose if you look at that team 4 years ago, they had Mandzukic up front. I haven't got Mandzukic up front anymore. Still got a very talented midfield. Again, Croatia have drifted a fair bit because of the way that Canada played against Belgium on Wednesday. And I just wonder if it's gone too far. I'm going to go for Croatia to win this game. I think they'll enjoy playing against a Canada team that quite gung-ho. Morocco were definitely not gung-ho. What's the opposite of gung-ho? They were that. There might just be more opportunities for Croatia here to spring counter-attacks on Canada that were very brave in attack, but they did leave spaces, didn't they, for Belgium? And Belgium just weren't good enough on the night to take advantage of those. Croatia, their midfield will be able, I think, to control the game much more than Belgium were. And everyone was impressed with Canada. They've still lost the game. And Croatia, I think, have drifted now to a price that I'm happy to take.
I've got my eyes on two games next week that I think are up for game of the week. And this next one is one of them. The other one we'll be discussing in a moment, Portugal against Uruguay. But it's Spain against Germany, 7 o'clock on Sunday. This is going to be a cracker.
Oh, this is going to be absolute must watch, particularly, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that Germany just will feel like they need to win the game. As it stands, they definitely need to win the game. Otherwise, they're likely to be going home. So, yeah, I am really excited for this match. I think both teams to score is a bet in it, because Germany created a lot against Japan. That defence, if it struggles with sort of with Japan's counter-attacks, going to be even harder, isn't it, with Olmo and Asensio and Ferran Torres leading that Spanish line. So I do like that. I think the draw in play is one of those ones where if it is that Germany needs to win, you know, the sort of, if it is a draw with 20, 30 minutes to go, like, I think that you want to then start backing goals then, because Germany will have to open up. I like most goals in the second half as a subsidiary bet to the both teams to score. Both teams to score is the main one.
Okay. Monday, 10 a.m, Cameroon against Serbia. Worth noting that the games that we're about to speak about, we haven't actually seen the teams play in the first games yet. So take these, I guess, with a pinch of salt. Cameroon, Serbia, Mark.
Yes, I was at 9:40 on Thursday morning. And thank you, Jack, for getting up early and doing these before the matches, so I can...
Have you had to have a meeting during a game yet?
There was... When was I? There was one.
Is the person in question now being sacked?
Because it was my boss, Bruce Millington, called one.
Oh, goodness.
At 2:30, Germany against Japan. And he was watching it on his phone, and everybody else had access to a TV, so it was ahead of him. And like, you could just sort of see like everybody's eyes sort of, because it was when Japan, it was during the time when Japan scored both of their goals. So, you could just see everybody's eyes slightly distracted. So I'm not sure what he said in those moments. Hopefully we've got the meeting notes, we can check back. So yeah, we are speaking before the first round of the game. So this is, again, it's more kind of longer term views on all of these teams. And both teams are scoring, Cameroon versus Serbia. All the power, on paper at least, is in the front areas of the pitch for both teams. So that was the one I liked there.
Monday, 1 o'clock, South Korea, Ghana.
Asian teams are doing fairly well so far. So I'm maybe more nervous than I was a week ago about this one. But when I looked at the teams, I thought that Ghana were a fair bit better than South Korea. And the draw no bet, it's sort of, you know, pretty close. I think they should be favourites to win the game. I think the players that they brought in recent months means that you can just like scribble out all of their form. This is a new team with new players and a new manager, and looks better than kind of the results that they've had over the last couple of years.
Let's hope no meetings are called at 4 o'clock on Monday, because I know Mark is a big fan of Brazil. They take on Switzerland.
Yeah, so Brazil to win an under 3.5 goals in this game. I think Brazil probably already know what's coming against Switzerland. I was mentioning about some of the outsiders that were aggressive in the press and tried to defend that way. Don't see that from Switzerland. I think they'll sort of drop in and try to make life difficult for Brazil. Might have to be sort of one of them where they have to show patience. But Brazil have got quality on the pitch, and also whoever the substitutes are, you know, we don't know who's going to start in the game, but a lot of depth to their attacking options. So even if they don't break through after 45, 60 minutes, that there's still enough time, I think, for them to eventually get the win.
Don't worry about having Monday blues next week, because you've got Portugal against Uruguay to look forward to at 7 o'clock. What's the bet for this one?
I thought a draw. They're the best two teams in the group. Now, maybe the draw isn't a great bet, depending on the results from the first game. You know, somebody really needs to win. As we're speaking, my sort of impression was, well, you know, Portugal probably win, Uruguay probably win. Then they're the two best teams in the group. They think, well, a draw is a good result, and then we'll beat the other two. It wouldn't be surprising if it played out that way. But even if it doesn't, I think that they're fairly well matched sides. I know in the outright betting, Portugal are a lot shorter than Uruguay, but Uruguay, I think, are a tough team to beat. And Portugal are not a team noted for sort of forcing the issue. They actually aren't very good at that. It's why they sometimes struggle in qualifying. So, the draw. I'm not as excited for the game as what you are. Actually.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we're two good teams, and that, you know, hopefully it will live up to it. But I think Germany v Spain is absolutely the game to watch in that one. And then I'm excited to see Argentina against Mexico, France v Denmark. I put them three above Portugal v Uruguay. Yeah.
You've basically just named the whole list. Absolutely love it. Let's go on to your best bets for the week. We'll start with the player prop shot, Mark.
Well, I think the player props, one of the most interesting things, of course, has been the amount of injury time. I've not been following kind of, you know, the passes and shots and tackles sort of markets that closely during this World Cup. But somebody came up to me yesterday and said that they really don't think the bookmakers are factoring in enough.
That's true. Yeah.
For the minutes, and that particularly the he'd said he'd been chopping it off on the on the passes markets. And so one to consider. But Ismail Assar, I've mentioned him earlier on. I thought he was so lively against the Dutch, and that was against Dumfries and De Ligt. I couldn't even tell you he was playing on that right-hand side for Qatar, but I can tell you they're not very good. So I'd expect him to be having plenty of shots. And if Qatar's best goalkeeper was the one that was playing against Ecuador, you wouldn't like to see like what the option is if they drop him, would you?
No, absolutely not. I tell you what, Mark, I've really been enjoying playing in is the penalty to be awarded.
You know the horse racing guru, Paul Keighley, he was in the office yesterday. I said to him, have you had any World Cup bets? Sort of half thinking he'd say no, because football's not his thing. And he says he's had a bet in every game. And he's been betting, he said this was before yesterday's chaos. He said, I've been backing a penalty in every match. So he had a day to remember. Okay, obviously, the odds are coming in for penalties now, but the penalty takers for all these teams. I think Sarr probably is going to be Senegal's penalty taker with no Mane. So in terms of first goal scorers, you know, be looking at your penalties.
There we go. Points on Paul Keighley then, by the sounds of things. A long shot.
I'll be going on the racing podcast. He can come on.
Indeed. A long shot, please, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, this was where I was sort of struggling, really, because there's not a huge amount of outsiders that I was looking at. But I think the US, didn't they? They struggled from the aerial threat that Wales put in. Our boy Ben Davis nearly scored from one set piece. So there were opportunities there. I don't know if Harry Maguire's going to play. If he does, we know how much of a danger he is in the sort of penalty box from corners and free kicks. So it would be him if he's available to score any time. If he's not, then I'll go for John Stones.
Okay, a treble, a successful time of things last couple of weeks, Mark. So let's go again.
Yeah, not in the first round of World Cup matches, unfortunately, because of Argentina. We were on them and sort of over the goals, weren't we, against Saudi Arabia. So felt like it was going to be a winner, but it wasn't. But can't let that put us off, because I'm going back in for Argentina. But if I do it in sort of chronological order, I'm going for England to beat the USA. I'm going for Argentina to beat Mexico. So they would be probably the two, I suppose, sort of strongest fancies, if you like, really, from those two games. And I will stick in for the third one, over 2.5 goals in France against Denmark. Just going back to the England game, England have scored 9 goals in their last 110 minutes of play. So that's one of the reasons for backing England and over 1.5 goals. So I just go for it again. England and over 1.5 goals, Argentina to beat Mexico, and over 2.5 goals in France against Denmark.
Superb. This has been a whistle-stop tour of World Cup action in this episode, Mark. But if you were to add one bet next week, what would it be?
Me not to move from sort of watching the World Cup.
Less than 1,000 steps in a day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're on the unders there. France v Denmark. We're not on the unders for this game, though. France v Denmark, over 2.5 goals. That's the way that the French team set up, with Griezmann behind the front three, I think gives them so much going forward. Defensively, I worry about them in terms of winning the World Cup. I don't think Pavard's good enough. That centre-back pairing is new. Lloris, I don't think, has been covering himself in glory in recent weeks either. Too open in midfield as well, I think, in terms of them actually going on to win the World Cup. But the front three, four can do serious damage. Denmark gave up too many opportunities for my liking as well against Tunisia. But then I look at sort of the fact that they can offer more going forward. So, yeah, I think this is going to be a really good game. And, you know, if France do play well, they can cover the line by themselves.
Absolutely. Mark, pleasure as always. If you want to hear more from Mark, then join us again next Thursday. We'll be going around the final round of group stage fixtures and the first batch of knockout stages. Mark, enjoy the next few games in the World Cup. We'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.